Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd, your host and producer every Wednesday from noon to 1 here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. As you know, we're still in our pledge drive, our spring pledge drive, and I want to invite listeners to call 888-931-0901, or you can also pledge online at www.kkfi.org. I want to thank all the listeners and supporters of KKFI that called in last week. Suzanne, Curtis, there was Jessica, Joelle, Mr. Boyd, Jan, so many people that are supporting the station because they care. And I also want to mention that starting off this program today, we got a pledge from Suzanne, who's a working artist in Kansas City. She loves Art Speak Radio and KKFI. We love that about her. She loves that we support the arts and, literary community. And she's challenging other art groups that she's heard here on the program, like the Writer's Place, Arts KC, Charlotte Street Foundation, and others. She says that she's enjoyed listening to and learning about opportunities. So 888-931-0901. And thank you so much, Suzanne, for that pledge. Got a full lineup today, as always. I was fortunate to nab a little bit of a interview with U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera, who was here in town last month, and it was just a magical time having him here in Kansas City and speaking with writers and artists and people in the community. So I have a little bit of an interview with him. And many thanks to Simon Sharda, who is an excellent technician, audio engineer, who helped me through that recording, because it was challenging, to say the least, in what I had to work with. But I want to mention today also we have Chato Villalobos, who's a wonderful community activist, police officer, and he's a writer, a single father. I also have in the studio today Anthony Marcos Rea, who's an artist, educator. Later on, we'll hear from Natasha Rhea Ascari and Wayne Coutois, a writer. They're all writers. Got a great lineup. So bear with me. The recorded interview with Juan Felipe Herrera is a little rough, but I think you'll enjoy it. Here in Kansas City, and you spoke earlier with a small group of writers, and what you talked about was your words and writing is very musical. It touched on a lot of the senses. In fact, point you said, you told the writers, you are virtuosos, you have many instruments. Can you talk about that?
That is true, That is true. Well, you are virtuosos. You have your way of speaking. You have your experiences. You have your natural rhythms. You have memories and stories. And you have your own, funkiness of using words and playing with words. And you have all the media coming at you that you can use at any time in any fashion. So this gives you a lot of instruments, even on a page, in a line. And in one line, you can create a mural just with one line. So that's all available to you. So that's what I meant. And you can use them at different degrees. Sometimes you can use a lot of material, a lot of elements. And sometimes you can just come out and have a conversation in your poem. Or sometimes you want to tell the story of someone else, and you can do it through your poetry too. So in these times, there's a lot of stories to be told and a lot of things that are taking place and a lot of honoring that can take place. So many people are suffering and so many big issues are taking place. Not that you have to forget about yourself, but you can, on occasion, you can direct your voice for the benefit of others and then come back to the poem as a poem. So all that is going on. So it's a big orchestra that you can lead.
When you talk about your work in writing, you made reference to jazz, which is very influential with your work or in your life.
I've always liked jazz. It's my cousin Tito's fault. When we visited my cousins in 1958 for a year, my mom and myself, and my father was traveling, I stayed at my Tio Beto's house in 20th and Harrison Street in San Francisco in the Mission District. And it turned out that I was going to stay in the room where Tito was, Tito's room, and my cousin Vicente, my age, but Tito's older. And so he was a Chicano beatnik in San Francisco, of course. You know, young guy would definitely be listening to jazz in San Francisco. That was a thing in that time, the 50s. You have the beat movement, beat poetry, being cool, and you also have jazz, and you have the introduction of Afro-Cuban sound, because this was during the time of Afro-Cubanismo in Cuba. So you have all those influences of rock in the Bay Area. So my cousin had the albums pasted on the wall, jazz albums, Big Blue Bear, Count Jeter, and Horace Silver. So I'm in like fourth grade. So I'm listening to all this music that my cousin blasted out of his phonograph. He went to be somebody with speakers and an iPhone. So that's when it hit me. So I remember Count Jeter. I remember Horace Silver. I remembered it for the rest of my life. So then I began to love jazz from fourth grade on. So, yeah, it's influenced me, and I like those guys. They're just fabulous.
Well, your words have a certain cadence, a certain rhythm, a certain sort of sing-songy quality. What you read last night at the Public Library, that there's some sort of a pattern in your work with words and music and visuals.
There is, you know, and you're right about that. The musicality and the voice and the visual images, all those are available. And you know what's also available is your voice. Once we have the poem, then you have the score of the song. Once you have the score of the song, you can sing the poem any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the words, which are the score of the music, and then you have the images in the words, which give you a sense of where you go with your song, with your voice. And when you're reciting that poem, you already have the musical sheet, which is the poem on paper. And you can use your voice, because you have a voice, in any way that you want.
So you can
stretch the sounds of the words, you can stretch the line of the poem, you can add a lot of them to one, mm-hmm. to one line.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we see ourselves just as kind of like receiving dictation from the poem. It's the opposite. Instead of dictating to the poem,
Right. Even
though it was already did by writing it.
But the poem becomes like a dictation instrument, and we just kind of read it the same.
When in fact it can be a musical score sheet, and you can sing it any way you want to sing it.
Beautiful. You know, do you have any, do people have different ideas of what a U.S. poet laureate is? Do you kind of dispel all those sort of, expectations?
I probably do in some ways, you know, at the same time, you know, not everybody so heard that word. It's an interesting word. I didn't really know what a U.S. poet laureate does. And that's kind of an official term, and it also has official duties that are not known necessarily directly at large in the newspaper in every city. You know, we have an inaugural reading, which is what we do, and not many people really know that's part of our requirement, but it's a national thing. And then in the middle of the year, as a laureate, we do a special honoring of a poet and receives a $10,000 award, the winner award that the poet laureate selects for. And then at the end of the year, we do a closing lecture or reading or presentation. And those three things are what comprise the role of the poet laureate, as well as promoting poetry and literature throughout the United States. So, you know, it's kind of the term is a little different for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the duty, we don't really know because we're not in the Library of Congress getting all the information. It's not that available sometimes, but that's what it is. And as you know, walking around, traveling the United States, meeting good people who are doing their work and acknowledging their work and telling others about the beautiful work like I'm going to do here, and also sharing whatever I can share. With every group I meet in every city that I'm in.
You know, people love you. You're approachable, you're funny, you're irreverent. And, you know, people just have this sort of connection with you, and we love that about you. We love that about you.
Well, I love everything about you.
Bless your heart.
And, you know, everyone here, everyone's so much into our poetry, organizing events, stuff online, doing art and galleries, thinking about the community that's being gentrified, and being concerned about that, meeting Nacho Villalobos, who's a
beautiful officer,
who writes poetry and serves in the community. So I notice a lot of beautiful work being done in poetry, for poetry, for the community, publishing books, having this amazing series of poetry, the Latino that is collected, and the writing groups at large, and the library, with the library there, so it's a very vibrant community in town. And what a great model to show you the rest of the
people in the United States, what you're doing here. And I'm definitely going to talk about it. Back up and
bless your heart. Well, I'm going to come visit you someday soon. Next year.
Yeah, visit me soon, and I'll show you the famous office. the Hispanic division, the other divisions, and, you know, just enjoy yourself and present what you're doing.
I'll bring my ukulele. You bring your saxophone.
I'll bring my saxophone.
It'll be fun.
Maybe a guitar, but I'll work on that saxophone.
Bless you.
We could make some music here, right? I love that.
Some good music, and like that. So listen to it.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for coming to Kansas City. We've really enjoyed your visit here. Come back soon.
I will. Come back as soon as I can.
Very good. Thank you. And if you just joined us, you're tuned into Art Speak Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. That was an interview that was recorded under certain little risky, sort of difficult circumstances with U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera. And as he mentioned in that interview, he did read during his performance at the Public Library a poem that was written by Chato Villalobos, who was a 13-year veteran of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. The poem, Brown Eyes and Blues, brought everyone to their feet. And as he said in a group of, in a gathering of writers the following day, he said, he told us that, you know, he had his poetry in hand and sort of no particular order, but he grabbed the next poem, and it happened to be Brown Eyes and Blues, written by Chato Villalobos, and he said, I'm going to read this. This is a powerful poem, and this is what I'm going to read. If you are on Facebook, you can go to Art Speak Radio and see the video clip that I've posted about Juan Felipe reading Chato's poem. And so I want to introduce Chato Villalobos, who is here in the studio live. Hello, my friend.
Hey, how are you, Maria?
Very good, very good. And you know what? I'm going to mention this because you're so humble. And I think people need to know that yesterday, June 14th, you received, along with Officer Matt Tomasic and yourself, the Meritorious Service Award, a commendation for work as community police officers. And that, you know, we're so proud of you. We're so happy that we have you on our side.
Well, thank you, Maria. It was a real special and honored to get that award.
Yeah. Well, because I know for many years you've worked on the Westside Community Action Network Center, the CAN Center, as it's called often. And I want to go back to the U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe, because he made an appearance there and met some of the men. What was that like for you and for them?
Yeah, it was really spiritual, to be honest with you. He's a beautiful soul. As you know, you got to meet him. He went down there with a pure heart. You know, some of the members of Latino Writers Collective were hosting him that day, and Erica and Jose thought, like, hey, you know, he wanted to see some of the neighborhoods and some of the Latino barrios, and they picked the Westside and Argentine, which are two very beautiful communities with a lot of history, and they told him about the work being done at the CAN Center, one of them being the day labor site that we formed several years ago to help advocate for the men who were immigrants and homeless and had certain just systemic challenges. And so he wanted to come down there, and I had no idea. So I get a text message from Erica, and she says, hey, are you at the center today? Juan Felipe wants to come by. And So I was like, no, but I'll be there in 30 minutes. So I went down there, and he just was so sincere about wanting to know some of the things going on. And we told him about our philosophical approach to working with the community and people who are the most exploited in this country, mm-hmm. and that we had an opportunity with our influence and as police officers and having the partnership we had with Linda Callen at the West Cant Center to really, you know, make a difference to mm-hmm. a group of people who were constantly being exploited for many years, mm-hmm. whether it was economics or crime or whatever. And so he really just asked some, you can tell he's very sincere in the conversation and wanted to know what's going on, and mm-hmm. just a really pleasant energy to talk to.
Well, and I think, you know, because he's been in that place in the sense that growing up as a migrant farm worker mm-hmm. himself and knowing what it's like, you know, to work so hard for next to nothing and be exploited. I mean, there is a connection not only culturally but with the, you know, the experience of being a farm worker and, you know, the struggle that these men go through every day.
Yeah, absolutely. He was, you know, he shared some of his experience, you know, mm-hmm. with that. And, mm-hmm. And I got to share mine. You know, my parents came here as immigrants as well, looking yeah. for a better life. And I was lucky. I was born in Los Angeles, so I didn't face half of the challenges a lot of these men and their families mm-hmm. face. So, yeah, we connected on all kinds of levels. Mm-hmm. And then he asked me to share one of the poems with him. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea
yeah.
he was going to read it that night.
You could just feel the crowd. You could just feel the electricity, and everyone was filled with such emotion. And it was so beautiful because it was unexpected. You know, he like as I mentioned, he just pulled, you know, the poem because it was right there on his stack, and he's like, I'm not going to go looking for another poem. This is the one that I'm going to read. So he read it. And there was a standing ovation, and everyone had tears in their eyes, and it was just a beautiful moment.
Yeah, you know, I can't even put into words what yeah. I was feeling. Somebody yeah. asked me, did it go to your head? I was like, no, it got stuck in my heart, you know. Yeah. It went straight to yeah. my heart and got stuck there. It's yeah. like the best analogy, and I had fun with it, that I could come up with is like, imagine you're a beginning guitar player and Carlos Santana is in concert. Says, hey, by the way, I want to yeah. play this piece by this yeah. guy, you know.
Yeah.
Or he asked to hold your baby on stage. And very connected to that poem, you know, and it's a very personal poem.
Yeah,
I had
really
no idea,
is.
And yeah, it was a complete honor. You know.
Well, I know I spoke with Suzanne Gladney, who works with the Migrant Farm Workers mm-hmm. Project, and the groups are out of Waverly, Missouri, and Lexington, Missouri. She had texted me or sent me an email the next day, do you have a copy of his poem? Mm-hmm. And then she was able to find it in the anthology. So, you know, it really touched everyone. And you know, it was just a magical night,
yeah.
I think, because he had everyone participating up on their feet. And
it was surreal. Yeah. Actually, the English teacher that got me into writing in high school was sitting two seats behind me, and
oh
I haven't seen her in a year. I haven't been in high school in 20 years,
uh-huh.
and this was the woman in high school who pushed me to write.
Yeah.
It was just...
I know.
Yeah,
allergies.
It was emotional, but yeah. more than anything, just inspiring.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
a man of that stature, just so humble. He just had great energy, and all of his readings that night were just connecting with the crowd. It was great.
Well, and if people aren't familiar with him, they should be, because he's not only an activist in the community and world round, around the world, but he's also a performer and a painter, an artist himself, and you know, I felt kind of sad because during the afternoon, I was trying to locate some books of mm-hmm. his and called certain
yeah.
bookstores, and they did not know who he was.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we're at today,
yeah.
you know, and so it was especially powerful and special for us to support him that night,
yeah.
but to see the community, the global community, come out and respond to him, that was very awesome, you know, so I hope. You know, I know that, like, the Kansas City Public Library did such a good job in their involvement in having him come here. I think they're going to be taking the lead on making sure that we have representation in our literary, you know, resources. But the bookstores around here, it was disappointing. I did the same thing.
I
had to order it online, but that's fine.
I had ordered my books back at AWP back in, March, and and received them. But that's another thing. You know, do you want to tell the community or the listeners about anything that's coming up that they should be involved in or what's happening?
Yeah, you know, I don't, but I do want to say this. You know, I work. I'm a community police officer on Kansas City's west side. It's a traditionally Latino community. It's been there for years, and we've historically had a lot of beautiful programs that come through there. A lot of not-for-profit organizations do a good job of doing things. And one of my favorite things going on the west side this summer, there's the youth programs that are going on at the Tony Aguirre Community Center, which you can access through Parks and Recs. Maddie Rose has their art camps kicking off.
Yeah.
And I remember participating in all these programs as a kid. So to the parents, I just want to say this, you know, the most important thing for a police officer and what we realize that will help out with a lot of things that kids face systemically these days is get them involved in a positive experience with in a safe place with positive adults. That does so much for youth development that we really need to support these organizations, specifically the not-for-profits that really do a good job of taking a lead and providing these services for a lot of kids who otherwise wouldn't have the resources to do so. So that's about it. I'm going to stay busy just supporting those programs, so I don't have anything myself that I'm doing, but definitely want to make sure that I'm an ally and partner with the one things going on in my neighborhood.
Absolutely.
And I would encourage all adults to reach out to those not-for-profits in their neighborhoods and see how they can support those kind of programs.
Excellent. Well, again, congratulations for the service award, the Meritorious Service Award that you received. Thank you so much for the service that you provide in the community and keeping us safe. Hugs to your babies.
Thank
I know
you.
They're not babies, but
they're big babies.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much. And again, the video of Juan Felipe Herrera, who's reading Brown Eyes in Blues, is on Facebook, ArtSpeak Radio. Take a look at that. We'll be right back after this. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd here with you from noon to one every Wednesday. Next up, we have artist, educator Anthony Marco Rea, who is a recent recipient of the Rocket Grant Award. He's working on a project called Where We No Longer Gather, Liberty Memorial, Penn Valley Park, and Public Queer Looks, which is a site-specific public engagement project intended to explore the historical in conceptual roles this former queer space played in the construction of community for the individuals who gathered there in the 1980s and 1990s. To visit the Circle Drive was like being in a parade made up mostly of men. People would line the drive and park cars with windows down and doors open to share music being played for all those nearby. Now, Anthony Rea's boyhood memories of this place being a sort of celebration have been confirmed by others who share their own experiences with him. It is that celebration, that sense of placemaking and community that he is looking to explore in this project. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is a pretty big undertaking because I think people that were around in Kansas City know exactly where the space is.
Yeah, it was an exciting one because it's one that I've been working on for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the idea started in 2008. I applied for the Rocket Grant sort of on the last minute discovery, or at least knowing of the deadline. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, let me just get this out. So getting it has been really exciting. It's definitely put some pressure where there was pressure, but not as much to get this going. And so, it's been good.
It's really an important part of Kansas City's history. Can you talk about that?
I think it's a very essential part of the history. I think especially now that the city is changing and attempting to transform itself, in that transformation, I think many places tend to brush over certain parts of its history.
Sure.
For various different reasons. This history, this very specifically queer history, I think, and with the many different attitudes the space held for many different reasons and for many different people, it is an easy one to be forgotten. I think early on, maybe around 2008 when I first started this idea, doing research on the area and on the location, trying to find information, photographs. I'm a photographer, mm-hmm. an artist. Naturally, I was looking for that, and so I do understand that we weren't out there Instagramming, but you know, I was hoping to find imagery that of people of something, and then. There wasn't much, mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. what I did find, and what was many times presented to me, were police reports of hate crimes and other things that went down. And there was a lot happening. It was the 80s, and there was a lot happening in a lot of cities during that time. I thought that focusing on this and trying to get some firsthand information from people, firsthand experiences. To look at that community, to look at what that space was for many, many people, was important. And just to tell a bigger story of community and what this queer community looks like now, contemporary.
Now, have you received any sort of feedback from the queer community that you're working with? I mean, are they like, you know, it's about time, or is it, well, you know, I don't, is it a painful time for them to discuss?
From the people that I've spoken with, and I have to, you know, fully admit, I mean, I'm new-ish to the city after just being here, coming back a year, living away in Chicago for 16 years. So learning, building that network, first of all, has just, you know, been interesting and challenging. So I'm not completely invested, you know, at this point, and as far as my presence here in the community. However, it's in these conversations with the people I've met, have talked to people. There has been a really interesting reflection on the space it being kind of like, well, it was like a celebration, and there was a lot going on, you know, and not to apologize for any of that, you know, but to sit there and say, you know, there was so much happening, and reflecting on how many relationships and people they had met during that time. It was very social, you know, it was very much this public queer space that you can go to, maybe not the safest, but it was the one that you had that, especially if you're younger, you know, not being able to enter a bar or another place like that, which are huge community spaces, was important to be able to access this, you know.
You know, I mean, this is just a huge undertaking in a sense, because you're not only photographing, you know, using photographs, but you're doing some audio recordings, right?
Yeah. So a lot of the audio and that information, those interviews, it's very much a part of the process. Yeah. It will be in the work somewhere, somehow, just like the image. The image isn't necessarily the end product. It might be what most people will probably see. But the interview and all that comes out of those interviews are part of that process, that conversation, and where it may even take me. Yeah. I'm not completely staked in the ground as far as what the end will look like, because it is community focused and community based, and what I'm given is what I'm really going to be working with. So I think that's it's scary in that sense, because I think a lot of people want to see a very physical thing at the end, and that's important, and that'll happen, you know. But yeah.
Well, you know, and I think this opens up a larger discussion, a larger dialogue, you know, once the work is finished and or you listen to the audio files, you know. Yeah. I think there's a whole other discussion that can take place from that.
I like to, I've always, in my just teaching with students working in the community, I've always begun my projects, and I've always asked students to kind of begin their art making with a question, and let that question be the guiding one to take you through the various different processes you're going to go through. And the question for me is really, where are our public queer spaces? If there need to be any, and if there are, if they're not there, why are they not there? That's essentially the question, I think, and especially now, this past week, about the notion of queer spaces and the fact that there are very few and many times under attack, are just a bigger part of the story. And hopefully people will be able to answer those questions, and we'll come to our own conclusions, you know, and see what happens.
Now, I realize that this is a very important project, But with you know, the killings in Orlando, Florida, does this make it even more important, more vital to the history of the community?
Yeah, I freaked out. Yeah. Because I sat there and watching it on Sunday and hearing about it, and for a brief moment I had a hesitation because I was like, well, maybe this is no longer relevant.
Mm.
And then as I was watching everything unfold and the utter lack of voices from queer people of color, and at a very specific, you know, night and a very specific place, like, I was like, maybe this is just as even more of a reason to continue these conversations, because these spaces, this space right here, was almost eradicated due to violence, you know. But the removal of people's histories and stories is really what's at hand, you know.
Yeah.
And I want all those stories of as many of those individuals I can find that are still with us, but I also want more of those stories of this community now and who we are.
And I do want to read from this description that I have, that this project is an attempt at a document of a community that no longer gathers. It is a record of the celebratory queer space existing outside of bars or clubs, social or drinking, one that occupied the public realm and fostered friendships, relationships, and other types of communion for queer people. And, yes. And I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a terrific project. You know, I would like to for you to share the website if you're interested.
Right now, I have a Facebook group that's opened. It's The Mall is what the name of the org, Liberty Mall it went by at the time, but it's called The Mall. And let me see, look at my paperwork here. I know, right? The Mall at Liberty Memorial and Our Public Queer Histories. That's the Facebook group, and there's a Rocket Grant has me a project page that I will also be updating as well and throughout the process. More recent images are actually on my website, which if you go to the Facebook page, you'll be able to find as well. And then as those stories are collected and I figure out the best way to present those interviews will also be presented too. So yeah.
Very good. Will you come back and share with us an update on this project, Where We No Longer Gather, Liberty Memorial, Penn Valley Park, and Public Queer Looks? Will you come back and share with us ongoing documentation?
Yes, I will.
Very good. And congratulations for the Rocket Grant.
Thank you.
Very good. We're going to be right back with ArtsBeak Radio after this. And I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd, the host of ArtsBeak Radio, every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m. here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Radio. You know, I did briefly speak with my friend Janet and Stan Banks, who wanted me to mention that they have a poetry reading that's happening Tuesday, June 21st at 6:30. Stan will be the featured reader. It's going to be at the Black Archives of Mid-America at 6:30 Tuesday, June 21st. That's at 1722 East 17th, East 17th Terrace. And the website is blackarchives.org. So just wanted to mention that to our listeners. Also, please know that we're still going through our pledge drive, 888-931-0901. Challenged by Suzanne to all the arts organizations to pledge their alliance, their allegiance, their support for KKFI Community Radio and ArtsBeak Radio here every Wednesday. Next up, I have Natasha Ria Elskari. She's a writer, educator, poet. She's just a terrific woman. The only other has been her most recent second book of poetry that was released earlier this month. This collection charges readers to consider the perspective of the other woman, which is a voice that is often spoken for but never heard from. Heart-wrenching, aching, and breaking, Natasha challenges readers' perception in the complication of love. So welcome, my friend.
Hello, how are you?
I love that. The only other.
Yes.
And you just had a book release Friday, right?
Right, this past Friday at Magnolia's Restaurant.
Beautiful.
And it was a wonderful event. I think we had about 60 plus people there, which was nice considering Anthony Hamilton and Fantasia were in town. So I had a lot of, hey, I won't be there. I'll be at the concert. Yeah. But it was actually a really magical night.
You draw a crowd wherever you go because you have this charisma about you. You have an intelligence, a sexiness. Just your words are, yes, powerful. Oh,
thank you. Yeah, it was a really interesting night. I kind of talked a little bit about just this overarching, you know, fear or idea around judgment, judgment of the work, not necessarily judgment of me, but just of the work and the voice, which is why it's so important for this voice to have a space. But it was still kind of scary to consider. Yeah.
Now, you've brought your book along, The Only Other, and that's Main Street Rag that published that. Would you care to read for us?
Sure.
I love your work, and I love the voice that you read with.
Right, absolutely. I'll read the, maybe I'll read the opening poem, and it's called Grapefruit. I savor fruit like I want to be. I split open its flesh, ignore sticky streams down my fingers. There has been sweeter. A milkshake can do it better. But with fruit, you get something in return. Its complexity of acids. It takes two names to classify me. Often looked over, a little too big for a quick snack. Run the risk of being bitter. So perspective step back. But if you sit in the sun with me, pull me apart quietly, you'll see devourable flesh. Get your face sticky. I will give it back to you on the inside, only if you are brave enough to navigate through intentions, desires, commitments, and go straight to the juice. I am a grapefruit, bittersweet in my truth.
Gorgeous.
Thank you.
That is just gorgeous. You know, you've written so many wonderful pieces. That's just another collection that's just another poem that I want to have in my collection, kid.
Yeah.
You know. So you've been working on this book, but you also facilitate workshops.
Yes, I just did. I just came from one.
Yes,
and I'm excited. This summer I will be partnering with Youth Ambassadors, and as well as the Writer's Place for a Writer's Block when I return from my Ragdale residency. And so I'll be leaving on Monday to go away for about a month, a little less than a month. And I'll be working on my third collection, which is called Still Life. And so that was actually the book that was supposed to be finished before this book. But these poems wouldn't go away.
So
I had to make the decision to set Still Life aside. You know, sometimes you have a plan for writing. Well, at least I always try to have some type of plan or ambition around my writing. But I also will answer my muse. Which if that muse says, hey, I want to work on this, I will focus my attention on that.
And it's so important to listen to that, you know. And I'm glad you did.
I am too, because I, you know, this book was not nearly as finished as the other one. And I was like, what is happening? But luckily, you know, I was around the community of writers that just encouraged me to, you know, I kept bringing these poems and they go, oh, maybe we should kind of focus on this. And so I think it just was ready to come. And you know how birthing is. You don't really get to decide. Oh, no, it's not time for labor. I'm having a nail appointment. It doesn't work like that. When it's time, it's actually time.
I would love to hear another piece if you would.
Yes. This one is called Breaking Bread. How does it feel to be picked off and thrown out? Crust is always the clue that things are done, finished. Pull out joy with careful, covered hands, poked with a toothpick, penetrated but still proudly puffed. That crust believes it will be eaten. It's outside and on top, enveloped on both sides, challenging its stingy confines, displaying its brown round that brags of what's inside. Soft air that makes a tongue ring on contact.
Another beautiful piece. Oh my gosh. Yeah, you know, this it's going to be interesting to see what you come back with after a month of being in this residence.
I am really scared about being away. And the reason is that, you know, I've often joked about how when you become a mother, you know, there are just no moments that are really exclusively yours. You know, my daughter is away at camp in the mountains of Colorado. My son is maturing and almost, you know, a grown-up now. And so my mother is assisting, of course, with him. But I will not be cooking for anyone, picking up anyone, dropping anyone off. This is really about my writing. And I am so grateful to have this experience. But I am also completely terrified at the same time.
Yeah, it's your time. It's your turn.
Yeah, I think so. And I used to dream about this when my kids were little and screaming and running everywhere. And now that, you know, they've matured and can share in this excitement with me is pretty phenomenal.
Very good. Would you like to share your website with our listeners?
Absolutely. If you want to purchase a copy of the... I cannot say.
Your website, they can find out more information about
has
your
more
books.
Information about my work, not only my poetry, but anything else that I am involved in. And that email, that website is www.natasharia, that's NatashaRia.com. And I also have a Facebook page, which is Natasha Rhea Elskari, comma poet, and that's ELSCARI.
Beautiful. Will you come back when you return from your residency? Because,
absolutely.
You know, there's new work that you want to share.
Yes.
And we want you to share it here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You bet.
All right.
You know, I want to appeal to our listeners out there. You can still there's still time to call 888-931-0901 and make your pledge to ArtSpeak Radio. If you love listening to artists and writers and poets on air here on 90.1 FM KKFI, if you tune in every Wednesday from noon to one, you'll hear all about the arts, what's happening in the artistic community. 888-931-0901. I'm going to turn over next to Wayne Courtois, who is a writer, educator, and he's going to talk to us about the annual LGBT event happening Friday, June 17th from 7 to 9 at the Writer's Place, 3607 Pennsylvania. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So let's talk about this annual event because it's really, really popular.
Well, this is the fifth year that we've had the event. It's called A Celebration of Queerness. And it is strictly an LGBTQ reading. We feature several authors who get to read basically whatever they want to from their work. Some people will write something specifically for this occasion, and other people will just read from their work. I usually read from whatever I happen to be working on at the time. And it's a great reading, and it definitely pulls the community together, at least briefly. Yeah. And that's a wonderful thing because we don't have, even during Pride Month, we don't really have enough art-related queer events.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so this event, you will host this along with Charles Ferruza at the Writer's Place. And some of the featured writers would be Mark Manning, my radio husband, Robin Wayne Bailey, Michelle Pond, and Nick Sowen. And the program will also include music, right?
Yes, we have this wonderful band from Lawrence called Bongo Teenies.
They're fun.
They play the greatest lounge music and what they call private eye jazz and all kinds of Latin-influenced music, and they're just fabulous. So this will be the third year that we'll have them there, and I'm really, really happy about that.
TheWritersPlace.org is the website for more information. I know, again, this is very popular, and I hate to point out with the tragedy in Orlando, is will this be a moment for people to come together and share their feelings and emotions?
Well, that's a good question. And I've talked about this with Charles, and we both agree that we don't want this event to be a memorial service in any way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even want to have a minute of silence because now is not the time for silence.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not going to be oriented toward, you know, the events in Orlando and the fact that we are all grieving, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing, I think, is to keep moving forward and to do the things that we do best. That's what a reading should always be about. We're not going to be, like, singing Kumbaya. We're not going to be, you know. It's just, now, I will say this, though. If any of the writers who are participating want to read, you know, about their feelings about this event, or if they've written a piece specifically for that topic, that is certainly fine, because it's totally up to the writers what they would like to read. Each one, this year we have six writers, and each one will have 15 minutes.
Very good.
So,
if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Wayne Coutois, who is a writer, educator, and novelist. He's talking about the annual LGBT event, Celebration of Queerness, Friday, June 17th from 7 to 9 at the Writer's Place, 3607 Pennsylvania, writersplace.org for more information. And, you know, were you one of the founders, the creators of this writing series, or reading series, I should say?
Well, this came about because I did a reading at the Writer's Place back in 2010, and one of the board members there at the time, Mary Frances Wagner, was very interested in having a whole series of readings called A Celebration of Blank. And so they had a celebration of Latina writers, they have a celebration of African-American writers, and the celebration of queerness was kind of her idea because they were not currently offering anything for LGBT.
Mm-hmm.
And so she asked me, since she knew me from reading there before, if I'd be interested. And of course, she knew Charles.
Yeah.
And who doesn't know Charles?
Right? We love our Charles. Yeah. How could I?
So it just seemed to be an idea whose time had come. And I was very grateful to Mary Frances for talking to the board about it and getting the idea rolling. And Mary Frances is still involved as a volunteer. She's no longer on the board, but is very much an active presence at the Writer's Place and a great friend.
Yeah. So, again, that evening will include readers Robin Wayne Bailey, Mark Manning, Michelle Pond, and Nick Salwin, and hosted by Charles Ferruzza and Wayne Coutois. Now, Charles Ferruzza, for our listeners who are familiar with that name, he actually has a program here at noon to 1 on Fridays. Anything Goes, one of my favorite programs. You know, because we have a lot of arts programs as a public, you know, service to our listeners. And it's just important to really cover the arts and give everyone a voice that, you know, wants to read poetry or has an art opening and that sort of thing. So we welcome anyone into the studio to talk about their upcoming events and exhibitions and that. So, you know, I want to thank you. Writersplace.org, do you have any last words before we sign off here, Wayne?
Well, I do want to say this. Some people have raised some concerns about safety at this event. And some people have even suggested, well, you need to get security. Do you need to have, you know, some police present? And my response and Charles's response has been a resounding no. We do not want. I mean, anybody who is even faintly aware of gay history is going to see the disconnect between, like, having police at a gay event. That is just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, you know, some people say, well, I'm afraid. And, well, and if people are afraid, they have the option to not attend. But no, we are not doing anything different in terms of security. Because if we did, I know it may be a corny thing to say by now, but it means the terrorists have won when you start doing that and you start to become afraid. Although there is something faintly interesting about seeing straight white people being afraid. You know, people of color and gay people know about being afraid. They learn that early on. So it's interesting when suddenly a different population starts saying, well, should we be afraid? Mm-hmm. Is this really about us? Are we going to be hurt? So it's interesting. Yeah.
I think it's important to note that because it is a very valid sort of question or you know, what may be on people's minds. So thank you for sharing that with us because we need to know.
Well, thank you.
Wayne, come back anytime. Anytime you want to, read some poetry with us, and, you know, we'll see you on Friday.
Wonderful.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
You bet. I want to thank everyone who was on the program today, U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera, Chato Villalobos, Anthony Marcus Rea, Natasha Ria Elskari, and Wayne Courtois. Next week, June 22nd, man, we're just really ticking away out of June, finding our way out real soon. We've got attorney Don Simon, who's going to talk about what you need to know as an artist in, you know, the legal aspect. Lisa Cordes, who's the director of the Artist Inc. We will also talk with Davin Gordon and Ruben Alonzo with ArtCap Program. So join me next week, noon to 1, here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Now, at 1 o'clock, my dear friend Jeff Harshbarger will be in with Afternoon Jazz, so you want to make sure that you stay tuned for him. Still not too late to call 888-931-0901. You know, here at KKFI, we're volunteers. We do this because we have a dedication, a passion, a drive to put really great radio on the air. Not only are we heavily you know, we've got a lot of music programs, which are great. There's something for everybody. But we also have some wonderful public affairs programs. Arts Magazine, Anything Goes. We've got the 10th Voice on Saturday. We also have Every Woman. Take a look at the program guide, kkfi.org. We'll show you just the diverse programming that we have here on KKFI. 888-931-0901. I would love to have your support for ArtSpeak Radio and, of course, for KKFI. So with that said, I thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to like me, like ArtSpeak Radio on Facebook, and go ahead and say it with me. Honey, I'm coming home.